currently belong to a family of death,
right?
Which is the family of Adam. And Jesus Christ comes to be the father of a new family tree of everlasting. When you see that, you just go, oh, wow.
Yeah.
I want to belong to that. How can I belong to that family tree? Can I get adopted into that family tree? Do I have to earn my way to that family tree? Like, how do I get out of this current situation and get married into that?
Welcome to The Weekly, a podcast brought to you by Calvary Bible Church. I'm your host, Jay Ewing. So thankful you're tuning in here to the... I'm already lost.
We're taking this start. Do me a favor. Go to calvarybible.com and click your campus and see what's happening, as Jay says, in your neck of the woods.
No, we're not doing that. I'm going to hit this out of the park right here. Welcome to the week. Oh my God, it's right there.
All right, friends, this is our ninth take.
No.
Welcome to the weekly.
I'm getting this. We're going to be here all day.
A podcast brought to you by Calvary Bible Church. That's a good start. I liked my start.
Welcome to the weekly, a podcast brought to you by Calvary Bible Church. I'm your host, Jay Ewing. Thanks for tuning in. Like always, get connected and stay connected by visiting calvarybible.com. Click your campus and find out what's happening in your neck of the woods. As we approach the end of the year, there's so many ways in which you can step in here at Calvary. There's one thing that I would love Thomas to talk to you about, because I have fumbled the ball too many times in this scenario that might be in some cuts after the podcast. Thomas, talk about sort of the end of the year fiscal year for here at Calvary. That's how I'm going to do it this time. He can't even talk.
Oh my gosh.
He was going to say
that, man, this was like our ninth introduction.
Maybe 10th. You know when you try to
run this? They haven't gotten better.
They haven't gotten better. They just got worse. I was like, I'm done with that.
Jay, I think you've just done a lot of podcasting or a lot of speaking into a microphone recently.
You know, actually, I wore out my voice a few weeks ago. And you record for too many hours and not taking care of it. It's okay. It was worth it.
It's good. I'm glad to be on the weekly with you.
I know. It's been a long time, man. It's been a really long time. We haven't sat down together like this. But talk about generosity at the end of the year, because there's so many ways in which people can be generous to so many great organizations.
Yeah. I can't believe that's our intro.
Yeah,
it's good. So what Jay would love to share with you is that there are a lot of ways to be generous at the end of the year.
Yes.
We just thank you for considering Calvary as part of that end of the year generosity. Your gifts go so far in all the different ministries with kids and students, men and women, young and old, inside the church, outside the church, even globally. Yep. So thanks for considering an end of the year gift to Calvary Bible Church.
Yeah, that's really good. That's why you're the senior pastor. I'm not right there. Also, we're in the heart of Advent, and we're giving three ways. I like to segue this. My favorite listeners, who gives me a lot of actually great feedback, is
this your mom?
You know, he sent me a screenshot of his wrap up in Spotify. The wrap.
Oh yeah.
And it was the weekly. And then it was Crown Hill podcast.
Yes.
And I was like, listen, that weekly always better be on top, my friend. But in the heart of Advent, we are spending less.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And we are asking Calvary to partner with us to give a great gift to Crown Hill, a church plant in the northern Denver metro area.
Yeah. On Wheat Ridge with our great friends, Mark and Patrick.
Yeah.
I'm so happy for them to have kicked off and launched services after a year of gatherings and praying and, you know, getting a team together, a launch team, and thinking through how to do it, find space. It's really cool that it has become real.
Yeah. And so the heart of Advent's going to there.
Yeah.
Also to the updates that are much needed in the Calmia house.
Yeah.
And then... also, what's the third way in which
people will be praying? So we're seeing growth at Calvary on all three campuses, and we're just asking the Lord how best to accommodate space for everyone who's wanting to be at Calvary. We have a particular need in Erie where we've just run out of space, and we continue to add services. And we're just asking the Lord, what might be the next step to accommodate some of that growth? Mm-hmm. That might be, you know, some facility expansion, it might be planting, that might be adding additional services. You know, who knows? Venues. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, but I know that we have currently maxed out many of our spaces, and we're looking forward for Christmas Eve. How do you think it's going to land? We have 6 services in Erie.
Yeah.
Multiple services also in Boulder and in Thornton.
Yep.
But the shakeout's always interesting.
It is always interesting.
And this year we actually have Christmas Eve services.
Yeah. And we did those in 2019, if I'm correct.
Eve?
Yeah.
No, we've never done Eve.
We've never done Eve. No. Wow, man. That's historic, actually.
It is historic, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious if like that will be like overwhelmingly attended.
Yeah.
And then
Christmas Eve.
And then Christmas Eve will be like, you know.
Yeah.
Sparse.
I don't know. I think it's just a unique position we find ourselves in here at Calvary with all 3 campuses having to extend services and to make sure there's seats available for people that want to be here for Christmas with us, as well as those who get invited to be with us here at Christmas.
Right.
I'm just super prayerful, actually, in the last week or so about the possibility of all those seats and all those campuses and all those services getting filled up.
Yeah.
To hear really just the gospel message, right? Mm-hmm. Of who Jesus is and why he matters to us at people of Calvary, why he matters to the people that get invited to Calvary. It's going to be fun.
It's been a great season. You know, I think for a lot of churches, you know, in their imaginations, like Christmas Eve is like a Super Bowl of sorts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great service, but it's one of many wonderful things that have happened this December.
Right.
I think of like the Christmas brunch with the women on all campuses and how that orients us towards keeping Jesus at the centerpiece. Yep. Think about like the kids' production in Erie, mm-hmm. and how that keeps our hearts connected to Jesus at the season. Think about like carols and campfires mm-hmm. that happened in Thornton and in Boulder.
Yep.
To be able to gather as a community and sing some really rich theological songs that we don't usually sing during the year.
Yeah.
That keeps us centered and oriented towards Jesus. And then, you know, of course, Christmas Eve is like kind of that last punctuation mark on, okay, before we step into tomorrow morning, we have tuned our hearts. Mm-hmm. But this whole season of Advent, you've really guided us through this year.
Yeah, you know, it was a unique season where we talked about Isaiah 9:6 being sort of the theme of the season. You and I were talking about how cool it would be to sort of understand all the names of Jesus. Actually, we can't in even an Advent devotional because there's so many names. But to pick and highlight some that really are unique and maybe distinctive to who he is and some characteristics that we don't usually imagine Jesus being was interesting. So August, you know, really studying and prepping and then starting to write in September and into October, it was hard to get into the Christmas rhythm then.
Yeah.
But also it was like really important to sort of connect the dots between why that title Jesus matters and then how that really applies to the Christmas season mm-hmm. that I knew we would be in as a church. And yeah, it was quite the project.
It's a big project. Because you wrote devotionals.
Right.
And then you also spoke them.
Yeah, we went.
So you recorded them.
November went to recording them. I'm super thankful. I mean, a big shout out to Mark for producing those, and then even Jessica for being the editor behind the scenes of my writing. It's like, you know, it's a team effort around here at Calvary.
Yeah.
And it's not about actually who says what. It's about the team presenting sort of Jesus.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was interesting too because you get into these names of Jesus, like we're preaching in Isaiah 9:6, right? And you're like, there is so much robustness of who Jesus is that, like, I'm reminded of, like, the end of John. We can't tell you everything Jesus did. We don't have enough paper for that.
Yeah.
And you're like, gosh, is that a real true statement? Like, is that, like, just a punctuation of a fictitious or a literary type thing? No, it's reality.
Yeah.
There's so many names of Jesus through the scriptures that you can never encapsulate all of them and get to the meaning of all of them, the depth.
Yeah.
And that's why being with Jesus and following him and learning about him is a lifelong project. So it was good.
It's great.
Yeah. It's actually really hard to write something like that, to record something like that, and then know people are actually listening and reading.
Do you think more people have, I mean, from your feedback from others, do you think more people have engaged in it in its written form or in its spoken form?
I don't know, actually. I'm unsure of that. I know that some people listen to it in the morning or read it in the morning. Some go around with their families to read it or listen to it, and then some actually fall asleep to it. That was great.
That was a fun comment that someone had made. Like, I go to sleep listening to Jay.
You know, it's par for the course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't know, it's so helpful because there's so much that's wrapped up in names.
Yes.
And you can think of like a formal name. You know, you think of like, my name Thomas. It's like, well, what does that mean? It's like doubter or twin. Like, okay, I don't know really how to apply that. But the names that are given to Jesus are very, very important because yep. they not only reveal a name about him, but then what is it that he's actionably doing? Like, what is this right. characteristic of him? So even this week you were going through like advocate, I think, yeah. mediator. And so he has this name that actually tunes us into what is he doing that's actionable in our relationship with God?
Yeah.
And just to meditate on even the titles, right, of names. So you think of like the title of mother or father or brother. Right. Just hearing that title of somebody all of a sudden starts telling you like what you would imagine them to be,
right?
What they should be in that really high character, what that would be like to have that person in your life. So wonderful counselor. Right. You're getting counsel in the midst of your distress. Like mighty God. You preached that one right. on being the warrior God. Like when we're in distress and it feels like we have an adversary, even of darkness or despair in our life, to have one that addresses it, dispels it, right? Defeats it. Then this title this last week of Everlasting Father.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to sort of talk about Wonderful Counselor and start there because what I discovered in actually thinking through it, I thought it'd be more about like the therapeutic side of
yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Of like where he counsels us, you know, so many people in our culture have these really wonderful opportunities to meet with counselors to actually unearth and unpack some things that are going on in life. And I thought that would be the title. And it wasn't. It was more like a Wonderful Counselor was like had a war type of you have someone who counsels you to be prepared for battle.
Yeah.
Like, what did you discover that were like, man, that's really unique that I didn't know?
Yeah, it was the gathering of your council, like your board, your cabinet, so to speak.
Yeah.
In order to understand the enemy and understand your, you know, resources to understand how to address, you know, what's in front of you. I think that piece is like, oh, okay, that makes more sense.
Right.
Is when you're in the situation that Isaiah is describing them in of like gloom, anguish, distress.
Yeah, 734 BC, Assyria is marching south, picks up on the northern kingdom yeah. of Israel to conquer the southern kingdom.
Yeah, and where does Israel often go in the moments of distress is to Egypt.
Yep.
Like this is like the hallmark.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like when they move away from God as their mighty God, as their counsel, when they're not trusting in him, they will often, biblical story, is like run down to Egypt. And so God's revealing, no, don't do that. Like stick with me. You know, I am the wonderful counselor. Like you want my insight. You want my strength. You want my presence with you. But I think that piece alone is like, okay, so when you're in that situation and you have a conquering army, I can't even imagine that.
Yeah.
I mean, like we live in the United States and honestly, like war is always something over there, right?
Right.
But can you imagine being in Israel, Palestine, Ukraine, Russia, in Sudan right now, Somalia?
Right.
It's like, no, it's in your backyard.
Yeah.
And like that constant threat of destruction, of death, of harm to you, your family, your community, the life that you've built. that's extremely unnerving.
Yeah.
And so to be in that situation and say, well, what do I do? Where do I seek counsel? It's like the one whom God has sent.
Yep.
And James 1, I think it's 1:7. I have to look it up. It's like, if any of you lacks wisdom, right, you're seeking that counsel, let him ask God, who gives generously without reproach. And just to be reminded that, okay, our God not only is the wise counsel,
yep,
he actually desires to share that with you.
Yep.
So he's the source of it and a desire that you would know what's in his mind. Mm-hmm. And then he gives it to you without reproach, meaning like he doesn't belittle you.
Right.
Like you don't come to him and say, oh, I'm in distress again. And he's like, well, well, well.
Welcome back.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look who's like, come back, you know? It's like, no, seek me. And I would love to share with you my understanding and my counsel, which is higher than yours. It's above yours. I see through the darkness. I see the end from the beginning. I'd love to share that with you.
Yeah. When I was studying that word also, there's something resonating in the whole study of like, oh, this is what the book of Proverbs is all about. Mm. It was like Jesus is encapsulated all the book of Proverbs through who he is and what we see and read about him. It was sort of unique in that I didn't make that connection, but that was in the study of like, oh man, he's just the book of Proverbs and personified.
Yeah. It's cool. Like in Proverbs, like Lady Wisdom is the personification of all creation.
Right.
It's like by Lady Wisdom is the world created. And then you see in the New Testament, that's really another picture of Jesus Christ, who is the wisdom of God.
Yep.
It's like, okay. This is all coming together.
Yeah, that's a really unique title. That's really cool. I think in Mighty God, you know, the Hebrew word there is a very unique Hebrew word of El Gabor. And it's about like warrior God and or God warrior, how it would read. And uniquely enough, you know, you don't think about Jesus being a warrior very often, especially in the first four gospel accounts. He never picks up a sword or violence or any of those type of things that we would have in our mind as warrior. However, Isaiah awakens us up to that he is a warrior. And you read in the book of Revelation quite a bit of this warrior king Jesus who will conquer the adversary in the final days, especially in like Revelation 19, where he sort of is on this white horse. And culturally, you and I would say our kids don't grow up with heroes that are warriors right now. It's not in our culture DNA of where we pick our warriors. But historically, humanity has always looked for warriors to be the saviors of their society or their hardship. And I just thought that was unique for a title of Jesus when it comes to Mighty God. It also, there's a hyperlink there that I thought was, we didn't talk about on Sunday, but Pharaoh is cast into the sea, right? The crossing of the Red Sea. And Moses says, the Lord is a warrior. Mm. And I love that he is fighting on the behalf of his people constantly.
Which is people need to be reminded of. It's like when you've left God, you've left the source of your strength.
Right.
Like he's the one that goes before them. He's the one that fights their battles. He's the one that conquers the enemies. Like in time and time again, we see the people of God go out and with like unusual form.
Yeah.
Blowing trumpets, shattering clay pots.
Yep.
Like allowing even the enemy itself to turn on one another.
Right.
And without ever drawing a sword, they're defeated.
Right.
And it's like, oh, it's a reminder that it's God who fights our battles. Mm-hmm. It's actually not us.
Right. Yeah. It is who. And he fights our battles, but he's also fighting our battles today, but he's already won the war.
I love that Colossians. It's like, okay, so his warrior God, Jesus Christ, defeats, he puts up to public shame, right? He's undoing the powers and the principalities. And how does he do that? By the cross.
Right.
And so it looks like defeat, but he's actually the warrior over. That's where it's like through death into life, he actually disarms all of their ammunition. And so, they're like a a dog with a loud bark, but they really don't have any bite.
Totally. I would encourage, I mean, you were talking about Christmas and movies. The great Christmas movie is The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. And I love how C.S. Lewis spins the tale with Aslan of him on the stone table and meekness giving up himself. And, you know, Lewis has this great line about when he resurrects, he's the Christ figure in the literature, but it's like there was deeper magic. And I love that line.
Yeah.
That Jesus, when he went to the cross, there was greater significance than we would even possibly imagine of how he would disarm and actually conquer through his warrior mentality, all those things.
Yeah, C.S. Lewis has a ton of depth in that. Often I think, though, it's like, what is Turkish delight? Like, I don't know if I've ever had Turkish delight.
Yeah.
I mean, Edmund, like, sells out his whole family for it. Is it that good?
You know, it's quite funny. I mean, it's the just put in whatever you would sell out your family for in that moment, in the metaphor. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay, and then we had, this is the strangest, maybe the strangest out of Isaiah 9:6 title of Everlasting Father. And you did a great job of saying, because it's strange because we have a Trinitarian idea of how the Godhead works, right? There's the Father God, and then there's Jesus, and then there's the Spirit. How can he be the Everlasting Father when there's already a Father in the Godhead?
Right. And I don't think Isaiah's trying to give like a theological treatise
right.
of the Trinity. Though it's interesting because even in those titles, you have like wisdom.
Yep.
Right? So the Spirit of Wisdom. You do have Mighty God.
Uh-huh.
You do have Everlasting Father and Prince of Peace. It's like, okay, you could associate them with individual members of the Trinity. But really, it's like the Trinity in its whole is taking on form.
Yep.
I think that's what's described there. But that's yeah, right. It is a little bit less intuitive because you can imagine, you know, in Luke 2, when the angels declare, you know, good news of great joy is a Savior is born today, that peace with God right. and amongst men with whom he's pleased. Like, oh, yeah, yeah, that's Jesus. He's the Prince of Peace. We'll look at more this week. Everlasting Father, I don't get it.
Yeah, you know? And when I went to write that devotional for last Sunday, I totally missed an aspect which you picked out. And I was like, oh, that's really good. And talk about sort of the Romans idea of the new Adam.
Of the new Adam. Yeah, so I think when he says Everlasting Father, I think in one sense, it is Jesus who has the same character as the Father. Mm-hmm. So like when we looked at John, he's Everlasting Father in the sense of as it's been revealed that God is Father. So think about all that compassion and mercy. The protection and presence, as the Father has revealed himself to be, so Jesus reveals him to us. So John, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Mm-hmm. So in a sense of the child that is to come is in the same character and likeness as God himself, right. because it is the Son of God who reflects the Father to us. That's one aspect. That second aspect of his cause, like the biblical sense of origin is described as father of something.
Right.
So Father Abraham had many sons, right? So okay, the origin of this story of Israel kind of comes to the Father Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
The father of lies is the devil.
Right.
The father of every good and perfect gift is the father of lights of above. And then, so the question is like, what is Jesus the father of? And like, what is he the origin of? What's he the beginning of? And it's he the father of everlasting. So he's the father of everlasting life. He's the beginning of the family of everlasting that doesn't end, which is amazing because we currently belong to a family of death,
right?
Which is the family of Adam. So all who are born into humanity are born from the beginning, which is Adam and Eve, Adam being the figurehead of the family, mm-hmm. Eve being the mother, like the giver of all life. But that's the family tree that we belong to, is a family of death.
Yeah.
And Jesus Christ comes to be the father of a new family tree of everlasting.
Yeah, he's the new Adam.
New Adam.
Yeah, it's Romans 5 and 6 yeah. right there.
Which is like, I don't know, when you see that, you just go, oh, wow.
Yeah.
I want to belong to that. How can I belong to that family tree? Can I get adopted into that family tree? Do I have to earn my way to that family tree? Like, how do I get out of this current situation and get married into that?
Right. And Romans 6 says, when you get buried with them, you become in that family.
Yeah. And, which is baptism, right? Which we celebrate. It's like the immersion into that family is through being immersed into the death and resurrection of Christ.
Yeah. It's incredible. When you said that in the hallway, I was just like, oh man, I missed it. And oh man, that is incredible that he is our new father in the new Adam of bringing everlasting life. And that was just like maybe the best highlight of my Christmas season this year of the titles of Jesus. It's like, man, Jesus is pretty incredible when you talk about all these titles and you study all these titles and these aha moments, just like, dang. The depth of him is, you cannot search.
Yeah,
to the truest depth, right? Just these brilliant ideas and titles and characteristics of Jesus that make you worship him in the Christmas season. Lead to worship.
Yeah, I think for me this year was actually the third part of this week's sermon, which was not intuitive to me when I began to study it, which is just the title that he is. The Father Everlasting, meaning, and we quoted Spurgeon, he's the one that revealed it. You can't unfather Christ, which means you can't unchild us. It's like, so if you are in that family tree, you're never going to be abandoned from that family tree.
Yeah.
Because his fathering requires a childing. And so my security in the family is that he will always be Father, the same yesterday, today, and forever. So that means I will always be child. Yep. He's never going to get in a bad mood or get grumpy and like kick me out of the family.
Right.
In some eternity future.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that actually brings a lot of rest.
That's cool.
Is
That's
really think about the kids, you know, when the family unit feels at rest, with like I'm secure in my mom, I'm secure in my dad, I'm secure in my family. It's okay. Like, yes. That's what it is to be in Christ.
Yeah. Oh, that's a really good message for the Christmas season. I want to talk about sort of this idea of Advent, sort of changing pages. I just heard recently John Eldridge actually had this quote. He said, if you're not thinking about the second Advent 50% of the time in Christmas season, then you're missing the wholeness of the story of Christmas. And I thought, man, what a good statement to waken up the imagination. You know, we spend a lot of time talking about the first Advent of Christmas every year. Whoa, almost knocked down the tree. Let's talk about the second Advent.
Yeah.
How does sort of the Christmas season prepare us for his second coming?
Well, first and foremost, I think about it often because my kids are always playing Forrest Frank.
Yeah.
And Jesus is coming soon.
Yeah, that's
it's like on the playlist.
Yeah.
On the regular. That was sort of somewhat of a joke.
Forrest Frank was in my rap as the top artist because I share Spotify with my kids.
I think what it does for us, at least what it does for me, there's a lot of things. But you're still living in the land of the dying.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's where we currently are, right?
Dwell in tents, yep.
And it's like, well, the whole world is pretty spun up.
Yeah.
It's actually the opposite of these names. It's confused. It's fragile. It feels uncompassionate. And there is no peace.
Right.
You just read the news, like all this distress. But the call for those who look back at the Advent and really look forward to the Advent is actually the shaping of how we live as the present people of God within the current age that we're within.
Right.
And so it's like, well, I'm not going to live the same way the world lives, all like anxious and running around, angry and afraid, instigators of conflict. It's like, no, I choose not to do that because you know what's coming.
Right.
You know, it's just imagine if you know what's coming, even if you don't know how it's going to come, but if you know what's coming and the certainty of what's coming, it allows you to have an endurance through the present troubles. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, you know, when Isaiah gives this great prophetic word of hope in the Lord, this is certain. That's to shape them as the people of God in exile.
Right.
And so now we have the rearview mirror certainty, and it's like, okay, if that was fulfilled, we can most certainly have the confidence that he will return again as promised. Mm-hmm. And so that is given to us to shape us how we live in our present exile, mm-hmm. which honestly, Christian, for me too, that's why it's like eyes on Jesus, mm-hmm. is he is the steadying one in my life through all of its troubles.
Yep.
And you can have a fundamentally just different Christmas, New Year, year, family, marriage, friendships, community, if you know that. It is distinctly different.
Yeah. It speaks to me with the second advent is I need to be prepared. You know, Jesus gives a lot of parables about those who are not prepared mm-hmm. and those who are. And, you know, my Bible reading starts over in December 1 because that's the church year start.
I like it.
I know. You always smirk every time I say that every year. And my Bible reading actually started in the book of Revelation this time around. And it started at sort of the middle half of 19 and 20. And it was like a really wake up moment, like the alarm. Like, mm-hmm. am I prepared? Am I ready? Am I expecting each day, living my day, knowing that he is returning?
Yeah.
And live in expectation. Not only did Isaiah live in expectation of the first advent with the destruction on the way to Jerusalem, but we are living in expectation of the second advent. And that word prepared just comes to mind this Christmas season as I anchor into who Jesus is. And so often I don't live prepared, right?
Yeah.
I don't expect him to arrive tomorrow or even maybe this afternoon. And I need to live in a way that keeps my eyes looking for his arrival.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess what easily comes to my mind is Jesus' warning of how we begin to drift into not being prepared, mm-hmm. right? And so one of those things is we get discouraged.
Yeah.
Like, it's a long time coming. He's been a long time away. Let's take matters into our own hands. Or let's settle in for a while. Or we get distracted. Like, the invitation is come to the feast. It's, well, I got business to take care of. I have some investments I need to pay attention to right now. Or lastly, I just have failed to tune the lamp, so to speak, or to add to it.
Yep.
And I ran out of oil.
Yeah.
So when the bridegroom was announced, I wasn't ready to light my lamp and go in with him.
Gosh. Yep. So true.
So, and that, you know, there's so many ways in which we can get discouraged in his what we consider delay, mm-hmm. or we cannot attend to our lamp, so to speak, of filling us with newness each day, or even get distracted with so many concerns of the world that we lose our attention on the Lord.
That's right.
So
that's right.
May it not be so for us.
That's right. Well, Calvary, I'm so thankful as we wrap up the year with you. Thomas, thanks for your time in the Advent season as we talk about the names of Jesus, talk about Isaiah 9:6. We hope that you're meditating on the scriptures with us each day. Also, just know that we look forward to even the coming week of gathering and all these services and being unified by the Spirit himself of our commitment to each other to remain faithful, to be the embodiment of Jesus Christ in our world today. I look forward to those candlelight services, lighting the candles at the end.
It's going to be great.
Singing some great carols, opening up the scriptures, and anchoring our hearts and who and why Jesus came. Looking forward to it, man.
Thanks, Jay.
Yeah.
Thanks for the year of podcasting.
Yep.
Thanks for all of your contributions and work on the Advent calendars and seasons and devotionals. It's meant a lot for us.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Thank you. Calvary, like always, visit calvarybible.com. Let us know how we can be praying for you. We're a praying church. We love to be praying for you. Step in there. Submit a prayer request. Above all, just know, what a great year the Lord has given us here at Calvary in 2025. He has done some incredible work and deeds among us. It's for his glory and his glory alone. And we look for another year, 2026, as we turn the corner, as we journey back into the Gospel of John, and we become the people of God, once again, who live faithfully prepared for his second return together. Don't miss out on that. Make sure you're in community here at Calvary in 2026. Make sure you're faithful to reading His Word and praying, and we look forward to encouraging one another. Have a great Christmas season. Merry Christmas, and see you in the new year.